In today's episode of Ground Cover, we will hear from regenerative agriculture pioneer Lorraine Gordon. Lorraine is the founder and current chair of the Regenerative Agriculture Alliance. Her vision is to improve the holistic health and well-being of Australian landscapes, farmers and communities through research, education and practice. We will hear Lorraine talk about her own cattle farm at Ebor, her journey into carbon farming and the challenges she has faced. She also explains why the regenerative journey is never over and some of the practices that farmers can change to improve their own landscapes. This episode was recorded at a field day hosted by Southern Cross University and Banyula, a regenerative farm on the Northern Rivers. And Lorraine will be introduced by environmental filmmaker Damon Gameau.
Welcome to Ground Cover, a podcast created for farmers that looks at the challenges, achievements, and future of our agriculture industry. In this series, Communications Manager for Southern Cross University's Strategic Projects team, Rebecca Lolbach, will explore different regenerative agriculture practices and the impact they have on soil health, and take a close look at the results from some of our latest applied research projects. We'll also offer practical advice that farmers can take into their own properties, helping to improve the climate resilience of regional and rural communities and improve the holistic health of our landscapes. This series of Ground Cover is proudly brought to you by the Regenerative Agriculture Alliance and Southern Cross University through funding from the Australian Government's National Land Care Program.
So we've heard the science and now we're going to hear about the pragmatic what to do on the ground. So please make her welcome. And she's also really good on the dance floor. I've seen on the dance floor. So she's the First Lady of Region Ag and the First Lady of a dance floor at 11 p.m. Please welcome Lorraine Gordon.
Thanks, Damien. Yeah, you've just heard about my two passions, Regen Ag and Latin dancing, and it's absolutely true. I just love those combinations, crazy combinations together. So at the end of the day, I'm just a farmer, and I'm going to put my farmer hat on today, and I'm a very pragmatic farmer. And we're not perfect. We've made so many mistakes. And in fact, I think I'm probably the queen of mistakes. And I like to make my own mistakes so I learn by them and I can help others. And that's really what I'm all about. So for those that don't know where I farm up at Ebor. So I think we're about the highest cattle farm in Australia. We're 1,550 metres above sea level. That's high. In a normal year, whatever the hell that looks like, it's about 2,000 millimetres of rain and it's basalt soils. So I call it God's country, but it's like here. I mean, we're so privileged when you look at the northern rivers. I mean, I drove through all this rainforest to get here. Sure, there were some potholes in the road, but wow, you know, how privileged are we in the northern rivers? You know, it's just the most amazing place to be. And we've got a big job because we want it to stay like this. We want it to remain resilient into the future. We want it to be there for future generations. So I guess that's my calling, to make sure that that happens. So one of the things that we've done, I guess, to remain resilient and look after our natural capital is to have a number of enterprises. So when one falls over, you've got something else to lean on. And that's really important. So we do our best to make a living in farming, and we're in tourism. We do guided fly fishing for trout, and of course, we've got our beautiful hoofed animals there, our cattle, and of course, more recently, registered carbon farmers, which hopefully will bring us some goods down the track. But whether or not we sequester carbon, you know, at the end of the day, we're improving productivity. And I think that's really important to remember in this journey. So I guess I no longer consider myself just a cattle farmer. I'm a carbon farmer that happens to use cattle to sequester carbon and reduce CO2 emissions. Now, this is something I really do want to share. So I've done some extensive soil testing. And if you take nothing away from today, do take away the fact that everyone should be doing extensive soil testing. Because unless you know what you're dealing with, you can't shift a system. And so not only do I test for mineral deficiencies, I also test for what my microbes might be doing in the soil. So the soil biology. So I actually look at the two very differently. But when I did this extensive soil testing, I found that every paddock was different. Great. And that means I'm now in this position where I feel like I'm baking a cake for every paddock. And because I don't do things in small measures, unfortunately, whenever I take that step, it's usually far too big. And so I got so excited because I found out that all these paddocks needed all these different micro minerals to be corrected, from boron to, goodness, we needed iron and, of course, sulfur, phosphorus, nitrogen, all these different things. Even though we got beautiful basalt soil, these paddocks needed to be adjusted. So I said, yep, let's do it, let's do it. And, of course, the bill came back of how much this was going to cost me to adjust these soils, and it came back about $400,000, and that I'd have all these mixtures on the ground of which can't get any dew or they can't get wet at all, otherwise they set like concrete. They're also very dangerous to mix, so we've got to be in full PP gear, you know, the protective gear. And the staff and the kids at my farm said, "Mum, you are going absolutely crazy. We can't. How are we going to do this?" And the guy that spreads this stuff's going to have a hissy, which he has had a hissy. So of course I had to just step back from this and say, okay, because now I'm registered for sequestering carbon, I've actually got to do something different than we've done before. So by adding some different minerals into the mix, that's doing something different, as well as increasing stock density, which I'll talk about a bit later on. So I guess the message here, and it's for everyone, is you will be given a perfect, perhaps, solution to a problem, but we've all got restraints and constraints that we have to deal with. You know, there's not endless buckets of money to do these sorts of things. The other message I really want to get through to everyone is just take a step at a time and prioritise the things that you need to do for your farm. And you can't do it all at once. It's like a detox. You know, you're going to go broke doing that, and you're going to have a complete breakdown trying to do that sort of stuff. So just have a plan, stick to your plan, but take one step at a time. And that's what we're doing. So I've decided that I'm only going to do a third of the place this year, a third of the place next year, and the final third the following year, because that I have financial constraints. I can't afford to put, you know, whilst as exciting as it might be, baking a cake for every paddock, it's just not practical or financially available for me to do that. So, of course, the other thing I said about testing your soils is to see what your microbes are doing. We hear that you should go and put compost on your soils or compost teas or all these biological solutions. So I thought, okay, I better find out what I need to put on my soils, you know, to enhance my soil microbiology. And then when I looked at it, and we actually took it to the lab. So my lovely microbiologist has his own lab, and he gets very excited about all things mycorrhizal fungi and the bacteria, what the bacteria is doing to the protozoa and everything else, and, you know, what's going on. So we've got all these petri dishes and growing things. It's all extremely exciting. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what is he going to come back with? What am I going to have to do to feed these things? And he basically said, he said, it's an absolute party going on down there. He said, you've got so many microbes. He said, you don't need to introduce anything foreign to this system. And so we assume that just by throwing out some compost, that's got to be a good thing. Not necessarily, because if you've already got a fantastic population of microbial activity going on, you may not need that. You might just want to feed them. You just might want to give them some, what I'm going to do, fish emulsion or seaweed extract. Just feed them. Or you may not even need to do that. But you can't do this until you get your chemical balances right. So, you know, it's one of the things that I absolutely love about agriculture, and no matter what I've done in life, I've always been drawn back to it, is that not one day is ever the same. There's constant challenges. And it's just such a complex system that you never stop learning. You actually never reach the end point. And that's why I love it. It's so exciting because of that. And so I won't tell you what this will cost, but if you can imagine a couple of thousand acres and putting sea salt over the whole lot, you can just imagine what that would cost. So again, me, boots and all, saying, let's just do it. comes back the quote, and I said, oh, maybe we just do bits of the farm at a time. So reality hops in. Now, here's the best option: using the hooves of animals to sequester carbon and improve your pastures. This symbiotic relationship that happens with cattle and pastures is amazing. And we have improved our entire farm through these wonderful, wonderful things. So getting your grazing program right is absolutely essential. So it's about adequate rest. It's about stock density. And if you get your stock density, that's moving them across the paddock and moving them quite quickly. I'm not talking about rotational grazing. There is a difference. I'm talking about time-controlled grazing, holistic grazing, and there is a difference. And the difference is there's a plan. There's actually a plan, and you adjust your plan constantly when you get different weather conditions or different rainfall or different temperatures, or when you're looking and looking and looking and constantly assessing what your landscape is doing. So these are our best tool of all. And, of course, you're not only looking at your landscape, you also need to do some behind-the-scenes planning. Now, that can be by hand or it can be through a computer program, but you need both and you need all eyes on it. So you can't be sitting in an office in Sydney doing this stuff if you're not looking at your paddocks. All pretty basic stuff. When we start to talk about building natural capital, even beautiful places like this and like my farm at Ebor, I'm very focused on building my natural capital. And it's a game that never ends. But what we've done, we've got 168 springs on our farm. And, of course, these springs feed the Clarence, the Maclay and the Bellinger. Of course, if we're the highest property, they bubble out of the ground and go into the rivers. So I think I've got a very important task to ensure that I protect the spring heads, because I run approximately 1,000 steers across these paddocks in one movement, and they're beautiful hooves for the pastures, but I do worry about what will they do to compacting my spring heads. So with the help of local land services, we've started a fencing program. And spring by spring, I don't think I'll get to 168 of them, but the key ones I'm fencing off so that I don't have that compaction coming from those hooves. I'd like to brag that I can do multi-species pasture cropping at Ebor, but it is difficult. And it is difficult, and again, constraints. Every farm has constraints, and we mustn't knock ourselves around too much when we can't achieve what we want to achieve on our farms. But in our case, somehow I've got to time it that the pasture stops growing and before the first frost. So that's probably 2 weeks to be able to do multi-species pasture cropping. So it can be done. I'd love to do it, because that will really sequester carbon like you wouldn't believe. You know, just putting lots of species in with really deep tap roots is going to boost the carbon even more. But again, I'm trying to fight the season a little bit on when is that pasture going to stop growing. And when it does at Ebor, it really does it. It's brown. We get no growth for 4 months of the year. But then that frost comes pretty quick, and then that's not going to work very well for this. So, you know, we've got to work around all of that. And you've all got the same sort of constraints, no doubt, on your farms. Big thing is biodiversity, species diversity, plenty of it. Who cares what's in the grass as long as there's plenty of different species? Don't ever get hung up on weeds or this one's better than that or that's better than this one. Just plenty of biodiversity, because they're all there for a reason. We baselined down to an average of about 1.3 metres and we are starting off with 10% carbon. Now that's, everyone goes, wow, 10% carbon. It is a lot. But now I've got to shift that. I've got to move that up. That's the challenge. Nobody can tell me whether I can do it or not. I've asked all of the smart scientists around that I know, and no one knows this. It's just having faith, having vision to have a go. And we've done this ourselves. We don't have aggregators, so I wanted to learn about, you know, what paperwork's involved, and I wanted to make those mistakes myself, particularly if I'm going to stand up here and talk to you folk about what you should and shouldn't do. Well, I like to be able to say, don't do that because it doesn't work or it's risky. But anyway, so that's pretty exciting stuff. I can't wait to see what it looks like in 3 to 5 years' time. And that's why I'm doing a third, a third, a third of the farm and just spacing that out, because otherwise I would go broke. Don't take this too seriously, and it doesn't matter. I may sequester carbon. I may not. I may be at 10% in another 3 to 5 years. It doesn't matter. I don't care, because at the end of the day, I'm focused on sequestering carbon. And the more I focus on sequestering carbon, the more my productivity is going to go up, regardless if I decide to sell it down the track or not sell it down the track. That doesn't really matter to me. The important thing is I have registered with the ERF, because I can't go to sell it down the track if I'm not registered. You can't do things retrospectively. So that is important. But whether I decide to sell it, not sell it, who I sell it to, that's another question. Anyway, that's just an example. That's based on 400 hectares at the current price of ACCUs. But, yeah, disclosure. Now, very quickly, I want to talk about livestock and emissions. So here are the facts. 16% of the global emissions are from agriculture. However, we are the solution. We must remember that. So when we do get blamed for our part of emissions, let's not forget that it's only farmers that can sequester carbon. And in Australia, if we've got 60% of the land mass, that's a big role we have ahead of us. So we are the solution, because all of the big emitters, they can't do what we can do. So we've got a very important role ahead of us. And of course, 81% of that is from livestock, 48% from beef. Now, what does that all mean? Burping cows, farting cows. Companies now around the world, there's this great website I found. It's the Collar Foundation, the FAIR Initiative, and it actually lists all the companies that are doing something about their emissions and those that aren't. Just watch what the planet's doing and who's pulling their weight and who's not. And then be very aware of greenwashing, but that's another presentation. What can farmers do about methane? There's a number of things, but measure. Now, I found a really exciting Excel program that I could pump some figures into and get an answer out the other end, which I'm going to share. It's not perfect. It was produced by a bunch of academics down in Melbourne University, but it was fun to play with, because I want to know what my footprint is. I want to know if I do sequester carbon that I can actually sell it on the market and I don't need to offset my own footprint. So that was the question. Because you can't change what you can't, if you don't measure it, you don't know what you're trying to shift or what you're trying to change. So production efficiency is really important. Having younger animals, not old bullocks, is quite important. Animal breeding and genetics, a lot of work being done there. Mixed legume pastures, legumes are king. Legumes help sequester carbon, nitrogen goes back into the soil. Amazing what they can do. So more legume pastures are really important. Planting trees and, of course, our holistic grazing system is really important. So soil carbon, planting trees, biodiversity, water quality and animal health. And, of course, can't help but say the word, you cannot do any of this unless you're farming regeneratively. So regenerative agriculture is the way that you do all of this. And having paddocks, monocrops or bare soil, you don't sequester carbon with bare soil. So it's really, really important to adopt those regenerative practices, but just try one at a time. You know, don't try and be all things to all people and do everything at the same time. Just take up a new practice every year and just see how it goes and go from there. So on our farm, we've got about 350 hectares of trees with a lot of succession, so all ages and all sorts of species. And it's because of those trees, given that I'm running 1,000 steers across the landscape, that's a lot of methane coming out. But because of those trees, my net farm emissions, according to this program, are minus 1,429. I got pretty excited about that. I said, it's not perfect, this program, but I can pump in to this program my stock numbers, their weights, what I'm buying in at, what I'm selling at, and that's going to churn all of that out. It also asks me how much electricity I use, how much diesel I go through. It asks for the breakdown of the ages of trees and how many hectares of trees and so forth. So it's grabbing a lot of information, and that does all of this complicated calculations go on behind the scenes to spit out these sort of numbers. But that's what we need to know. We need to know what our footprint is. And not all farms are going to look like this, I guarantee it. But that doesn't matter. At least we know what we're working towards, and we can go and do some of those mitigation methods to make a difference. But this is what won't build natural capital. This is what you need to take away. Paddocks are bare soil with lack of ground cover. No go. Monocrops with lack of biodiversity. Spraying out paddocks prior to sowing new pastures or crops. This is the stuff we're going to be aware of. Set stocking. Overuse of synthetic chemicals, fertilizers, and pesticides. Now, it says overuse. It doesn't say no use. Let's be clear on this. There are some things, there are some weeds and pests that we just need to deal with. And there is nothing out there that's organic that is going to knock them. And if I didn't spray the blackberries on our farm, I would be just one big blackberry. I wouldn't be putting on any kilos of bay. You'd just find me underneath the thorns of a blackberry, gone. So it's really, really important to understand that sometimes there's just not a better solution. And I don't want to introduce 50,000 goats onto the farm to try and knock the blackberries. I have to get them sprayed, and that's unfortunate. And same thing, we have liver fluke on our farm. Like, there is no way to treat liver fluke other than drenching the cattle the couple of times a season. So, you know, let's not get too hung up on this stuff. It's what's best for the circumstances and what is available to us. And I think Lucas also touched on the fact you have to actually plough up to get the clay to come up. You have to break it up and mix it up and look at the difference it made. Sometimes we've got to till the soil. The less we do that, the better. But it doesn't mean no-till. It just means over-tillage and over-disturbance of the soil is not a good thing if we're trying to build our natural capital and protect our soils. On time. And now it's Dad.
One quick question, Lorraine. I know that you were the co-designer in the world first Bachelor of Science in Regen Ag that you can do at Southern Cross. Can you just give us a sense of how that's going in terms of uptake, and also how are you constantly adapting to all the science that's starting to pour out now around this subject? Are you having to update the curriculum quite regularly?
Thank you for that very difficult question. No wonder they got you in. Wow. I'll be honest, it's a tricky journey, this, you know, because it's a brave university that goes down this path, that takes on a completely different direction in starting a Bachelor of Science specialising in regenerative agriculture. And I've had so many other universities say, how the hell did you do that? Like, there's no way our scientists would agree to that. You know, this new religious movement called regenerative ag, there's no way. And I said, well, it's a young, it's a nimble university, and it's prepared to have a go. And it did have a go, which meant that we ended up with the biggest cohort of ag students in the country coming in. So there was demand for this. You know, we want to farm differently. We wanted to know, how are we going to remain resilient, read our landscapes, look after our ecology in a changing climate? What are we going to do? And so it's had huge success. But it's almost like building the engine of a plane while you're trying to fly it. There's always a bit of tinkering on the sides, you know. Oh, you need this or you need that or you don't need this. And so it is a bit of a constant battle to get it where we want it to be. It's not, again, it's not perfect, but we are on a journey of continuously trying to improve what we offer for our students and listening to our students to see what they need. And now we have our graduate certificate in regenerative agriculture, a graduate diploma in regenerative agriculture, and we've got a diploma, so an undergrad. So it's quite exciting that we've got the full spectrum of offerings. And as far as I know, it's still the only regenerative agriculture degree in the world, which is great. The Southern Cross. And we have a great bunch of teachers, researchers and academics that work very hard. And Hannah Beth Luke, where are you? Hannah Beth is our course coordinator. She's amazing. She is tirelessly looking after students and helping them on their journey. So, yeah, just going well. Only one way to go, and that's up.
Yeah. Very good.
Thanks for listening to Ground Cover. For further resources, go to farmingtogether.com.au. This series of Ground Cover is proudly brought to you by the Regenerative Agriculture Alliance and Southern Cross University through funding from the Australian Government's National Land Care Program.